This is from Deuteronomy 34. Then Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho. And the Lord showed him the whole land, that is, the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, as far as Zoar. The Lord said to him, "This is the land of which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, 'I will give it to your descendants.' I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there."
What if Martin Luther King Jr. was a Unitarian Universalist? I want to share with you a story from the Reverend Rosemary Bray McNatt. She's a UU minister and the president of Star King School for the Ministry, one of our UU identity seminaries. Before entering seminary herself, she had a distinguished career as an editor and writer. And at one point after having joined seminary, having started that, her literary agent called to see if she was willing to be considered to be a co-writer of Coretta Scott King's autobiography. She ultimately was not picked, but she did have the opportunity to meet with Coretta Scott King. During their hour together, the not-then-yet Reverend McNatt mentioned that she was in seminary to become a Unitarian Universalist minister. King gave her a look of respect and delight. "Oh, I went to Unitarian churches for years, even before I met Martin," she said. "And Martin and I went to Unitarian churches when we were in Boston." And then she said something to the effect of, "We gave a lot of thought to becoming Unitarian at one time, but Martin and I realized we could never build a mass movement of black people if we were Unitarian." Now, it might be easy to explain this away with simple demographics. Unitarian and Universalism have long been fairly white denominations, which is not to say that progressive liberal religion did not appeal to African Americans. Rather, up until the 1970s, our denomination was, in effect, actively discouraging people of color from joining our ministerial ranks. At best, a person of color interested in Unitarianism or Universalism might have had the experience of Reverend William Jackson, a chaplain in the Union Army, who announced his conversion to Unitarianism at a large denominational gathering of Unitarians, and those gathered there promptly took up a collection and sent him on his way. And while we've certainly made improvements since then, UU professionals of color today still face challenges in exercising their power, agency, and authority in a culturally white denomination. For example, Christina Rivera, the UUA Board of Trustees member, who in 2017 brought our denomination's attention to the subtle racism in the hiring practices at the UUA at that association denominational level, she recently had to resign from the Board of Trustees, partly in due to the anonymous and racist threats that were sent to her and her son from within the UU community. So certainly, even in the 1960s, race and racism would have been a barrier to Dr. King joining Unitarian Universalism and flourishing. And Reverend McNatt identifies not just race, but also theology as a barrier. She's not talking about the simple theism versus humanism tension. She's talking about the deeper theological issues. In brief, I would summarize these as the subjects of sin and of hope. Now, by sin, I certainly do not mean the idea that there being a list of bad things, that if you do these, you will then be punished forever or alienated from God or the holy forever. I use it more as a term, a placeholder term for the conversation about humanity, about whether we are basically good or bad, and where our hope for improvement might come from, and explaining why we do bad things. Dr. King called our particular take on this question back in the 60s the liberal doctrine of man, and he questioned it seriously. He came to feel that liberalism had been all too sentimental concerning human nature, and that it leaned towards a false idealism. Given his experience and his own theological vocabulary, this led him to talk about sin. But whether we use the term sin or not, the critique still stands. We Unitarian Universalists have a relatively high opinion of the inherent goodness and potential in humans. And while I agree with that in essence, and I think that's a good thing, we don't always have the most robust or helpful ways to think about evil or to explain when humans continually fail to live up to our highest aspirations. And so conversely, our approach to hope was also likely a barrier for King. In some ways, you might think that liberal religion has a more hopeful message because of this higher opinion of humanity. But again, if it's not that deep, it doesn't withstand difficult times. When we locate our hope in humanity, in society, in democracy, for instance, we can become very discouraged in times like ours when our democracy fails to deliver wise leaders and so many in our society perpetuate hatred. In Dr. King's darkest moment, when these sorts of things would happen, he was able to express his despair, pray to a God that would never leave him, a God in the eye of the sparrow theology, the God that watches the sparrow and the humans and everything. And Dr. King could tell this God of his exhaustion and his emptiness and find the strength to continue on. Sometimes the struggle, whether personal or societal, is so intense and just so big that people need a source of hope and strength that is larger than humanity. So what do these questions mean for today's Unitarian Universalism? How do we make sense of evil, and where do we find hope? How can these questions help us articulate a UU theology for the revolution, a theology which will help inspire and sustain us as we journey towards beloved community? I will say that the term sin is not one that I use in my own theological vocabulary. It has a lot of deep connotations and meanings that I quite disagree with, and I think there are better ways to describe similar issues of evil and humanity. But when I stretch myself, when I lean into discomfort and speak the language of sin, I do have a few thoughts about its place in Unitarian Universalism. The most important of which is that we of the liberal tradition inherit the idea of the social dimension of sin. That is, rather than focusing on the sinfulness of an individual action or an individual person, our emphasis is often on the institutional or systemic aspects of sin. The conclusion in Christian gospel thinking, where this concept originally comes from, is that salvation, too, is collective and comes about by social reform. This is expressed in our universalist heritage in the idea that whatever happens to us happens to all of us, and we are responsible in this lifetime for making or breaking hell on earth. And so this social sin also informs our understanding of what we mean by white supremacy culture. You may have been here at the fellowship when this congregation joined with many others across the country in participating in the white supremacy teach-ins. The idea behind these teach-ins, which were designed by UU religious educators of color, was to broaden understanding of the concepts of white supremacy culture and how they may be alive in Unitarian Universalism. One of the grounding resources from these teach-ins, or that was used in these teach-ins that I go back to a lot, is a 2001 paper on the characteristics of white supremacy culture, sort of defining and giving a take on what we mean by this phrase. This is by Kenneth Jones and Tima Okun. And they outline the qualities of white supremacy culture, and also they offer antidotes. So white supremacy culture doesn't just refer to a culture that believes in racial superiority. It has more to do with the implicit cultural values and the patterns, the ways of being, that unconsciously center whiteness and white people at the expense of others. So the characteristics include perfectionism, like Paul mentioned in his reflection, worship of the written word, defensiveness, a sense of urgency, individualism, right to comfort, fear of open conflict. You may note that these have nothing to do with particular races or skin tones or continental heritage. They have more to do with, again, those cultural and institutional values which center the status quo. They really work to uphold not only racism, but also patriarchy and heteronormativity. And all of American culture is steeped in this culture. Regardless of race, it pervades all of our institutions, and so naturally Unitarian Universalism is no different. It doesn't mean that we are white supremacist in the same way that the KKK is. It simply means that our unintentionally learned patterns of behavior uphold the power and privilege differentials and continue to center whiteness. In other words, we're part of America. Given all this, white supremacy culture is something that I can understand being called a sin. Again, with the understanding that this is a social sin, We play our parts in it unconsciously because we are shaped and enculturated by it. It's the water that we swim in. And we each have our role in dismantling the system of oppression too, don't get me wrong, but we recognize that it's not anyone's individual fault. It's part of the larger pervasive system. And still, as Unitarian Universalists, with our heritage of believing in universal salvation, this sin does not alienate humanity from the holy forever. But insofar as our conception of the holy is grounded in humanity, in each other, in the sacred found in relationship between people, then white supremacy culture does alienate us from the holy, because it alienates folks from different races from each other. It breaks up the common human family. It is a rift in the interdependent web. So what about the question of hope? Where's our hope for moving forward, for mending that rift and dismantling white supremacy culture? For Dr. King, hope came from his belief in God as the ultimate authority. As he related in his final speech, God allowed him to go up to the mountaintop, like Moses in Deuteronomy, and see the promised land. And he shared his conviction, this hope that was given to him, that society will progress and reach that promised land, even if it was beyond his own lifetime. How exactly Dr. King felt he had seen the promised land, what that really meant to him, I don't know. Perhaps it was in a dream. Perhaps it was in the little victories and the moments of success and relationship. Maybe it was simply on faith. For Unitarian Universalists today, I think we are developing a matured hope that is still grounded in the liberal tradition, but not so much in the rose-tinted view of humanity, but in the potential that we have, especially for self-critique and reform. This is the most consistent thread, specifically in our liberal theology, which connects us even far back to the left wing of the Reformation. As Dr. King summarized it, it's the devotion to the search for truth, the refusal to abandon the best light of reason. Never assuming that we have all the answers, the best of our tradition calls us to self-awareness and self-critique. Now, left unchecked, this tendency might begin to operate like the perfectionism of white supremacy culture, but appropriately understood and employed, it can lead us to strengthen our values and to keep us on a path towards anti-racism and liberation. So an example, some UUs have proposed a self-critique and even a literal editing of our tradition in that they propose an eighth principle added to our current seven UU principles. This principle would be to, quote, journey towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. Those who propose this language realize that while our existing principles are certainly in line with supporting anti-racism and anti-oppression, we might do well to explicitly name racism and our intent to work to dismantle it in our statement of guiding principles. Otherwise, it's not explicitly noted. And while simply adopting the new language itself may not change anything instantly, it certainly won't change anything instantly, the mere fact that we're engaging the discussion exemplifies our willingness and interest to be self-critical and to change as necessary. This gives me hope. Another thing that gives me hope is the Commission on Institutional Change, which is a group of diverse Unitarian Universalists and leaders who are working to help our denomination fight and dismantle this white supremacy culture in our own denomination. They do things like a racism audit. They're giving monthly reports. It's very tough, but very important work. And in addition to this general hope in Unitarian Universalism, and really a hope for Unitarian Universalism, we each have our own reasons for hope, our own sources for withstanding, or at least enduring, despair. Where do you find hope? What are the times that maybe you've glimpsed the promised land? For me, I do have a faith and a belief that love wins and that we can overcome racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, and all the other oppressions. We have a capacity for great evil, and I can't forget that, but I know that we have the potential within us for beloved community. And I find hope in seeing those spaces where we get a little closer to the dream, where we sometimes get it right, in those real heart-to-heart relationships, in the scenes like Paul described of that wedding and a multicultural dance with little, if any, self-consciousness. These moments strengthen my conviction that what Dr. King dreamed about, what Black Lives of UU is saying to our denomination, and what Black Lives Matter is saying right now to our nation, it's all possible, It's all human. We have the capacity to journey towards this, and we will get there. And the key element for me in the mountaintop story is the sheer longevity of that journey. The we of you and I and everybody in this room may not get there. We may not enter the promised land. But I'm convinced, as Dr. King was, that the we of common humanity will get there. We must not lose sight of the goal. As a 19th century Unitarian minister, Theodore Parker, said, and Dr. King repeated, the arc of the moral universe is long. We cannot see very far. But from what little we do see, we can be sure that it bends towards justice. We must be able to see both the complexities of social sin, the sins of white supremacy culture, and at the same time see the hope, however we may find it, that helps us play our part to bend that arc a little more towards justice. It doesn't bend on its own, you see. And so as we began with Hebrew scripture, I want to end with wisdom from the Talmud, which reminds us of the enormous scale of the work ahead of us and encourages us to do our part, grounded in love. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now. Love mercy now. Walk humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it.